Hello and welcome to episode 18 of the Factory Reset Podcast. This podcast is all about giving Jesus Christ what he paid for with his own blood, and that is our whole lives. In the last episode, I talked about the importance of Jesus' teaching on love for enemies. It's one of only two issues that are given a lot of attention in both of Jesus' most important public teachings, the Sermon on the Mount and the Sermon on the Plain. And that should alert us to how important this is to him. It's clearly far more important to Jesus than it is to many of us. It was central in his preaching, but it's not central to typical Catholic or Protestant preaching and teaching. When was the last time you heard a pastor or your community group leader or Bible study leader give serious attention to this issue? It really needs to become a priority. In this episode, I want to talk about what Jesus says in Matthew 5 and Luke 6, two primary texts for this subject. There are two topics that Jesus discusses in these chapters, which go hand in hand: love for enemies and non-resistance. In the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, non-resistance and love for enemies are each given their own separate section of the sermon. Non-resistance is covered in Matthew 5, 38 to 42, and love for enemies is covered in verses 43 to 48. And that they are right next to each other helps to show how connected they are. But in the Sermon on the Plain in Luke 6, Jesus does not separate them, but it's all mixed together in one teaching. And that further demonstrates how inseparable these two things are. And then you think about how Jesus lived. Part of how Jesus loved his enemies was through non-resistance. That was what his love for his enemies looked like. And so he led the way for us here. And this is the way in which he commands and teaches new covenant believers to love our enemies. We do not have the kind of love for our enemies Jesus modeled and wants to see in us without non-resistance. But I want to discuss these two things separately. In this episode, I want to look at what Jesus commands concerning love for enemies specifically, Matthew 5, 43 to 48, and also what he says in the Luke 6 passage. And in particular, I want to talk about what Jesus means by love. Because it's common to hear professing Christians today claim that followers of Jesus may have to fight against or kill their enemies at times in this world, and that that's okay because we can still love them in our hearts. We can still love our enemies just like Jesus commanded us, even if we may take up arms against them at times. Well, is that the sort of love Jesus is talking about? Is that what Matthew 5 and Luke 6 are teaching us? Many of us seem to think so. We hear Jesus tell us to love our enemies, and we seem to think that he's just telling us to feel a certain way about our enemies that's detached from what we're actually doing to them. We think we can kill someone in war or in self-defense, but it's okay if we have love for them on the inside. But can we really compartmentalize like that? Can we keep our hearts and our outward behavior separated like that? Can we really love someone with the kind of love Jesus commands while our actions are anything but loving? If our actions are the overflow of our hearts, if they reveal what's really in our hearts, then we have a big problem with this idea that so many of us have bought into. And I think that as we go through what Jesus says here in Matthew 5 and Luke 6, we're going to see that we really cannot love someone in the way Jesus commands us to while we fight or hurt or kill them. And we usually know better than to think this way about other areas of our lives, don't we? Just like you can't simultaneously love your spouse in the way Jesus commands you to while you have an affair on them or while you neglect their desires. You can't do that and say, well, I did this awful thing to my spouse or behind their back, but I was loving them in my heart. In the same way, you can't simultaneously love the poor, the way Jesus says to, while you ignore their plight, even though you could do something to help if you chose to. You can potentially have warm feelings for your spouse or towards the poor while you wrong them or neglect them, but that's not loving them with the love of Christ, no matter what you may think you feel inside. Our hearts and our deeds are inextricably linked, and love is something we choose to do, not only something we feel on the inside. And I'm very excited to look at these two passages because it comes very clear when you're no longer trying to keep your heart and your actions separated in order to get out of the difficult thing that Jesus is calling us to. But first, before getting into Matthew 5, 43 to 48 and Luke 6, I want to just say a little bit about Jesus' teaching on anger because I think it has some implications. The teaching on anger is the first teaching in the main body of the sermon in Matthew 5 to 7. Jesus tells us that while the old covenant forbid murder, that we commit murder even if we're angry with someone. We're in danger of judgment and hellfire if we merely insult someone or call someone a fool and hold them in contempt. So here's something to consider. If Jesus forbids us to be angry with someone or to insult someone or to call them a fool, how reasonable is it to think that he would permit our killing someone or taking up arms against people? Can it really be the case that if someone attacks me physically, I am forbidden by Jesus to be angry at them or to use insulting language against them, but permitted by Jesus to beat them up or end their lives? Would that be consistent? I realize that Jesus is addressing the heart in this teaching on anger. He's talking about murder, and he wants not only to forbid murder as an outward behavior, but the anger within that can lead to actual murder. Even that is not allowed in his kingdom. So it's what's in our hearts that he cares about, not just what we do or don't do outwardly. Jesus wants pure hearts. And we cannot have pure hearts towards someone else and at the same time be angry at them or insult them or call them idiots. So then, is it possible to have a pure heart towards someone while you hurt or kill them? It's definitely possible to have a grudge or to harbor anger or hatred towards someone without actually touching them, doing anything to them physically. In other words, it's possible to have an impure heart towards someone without hurting or killing them. The question is, can you have a pure heart towards someone while you actually do hurt or kill them? I think the answer is obvious. Maybe you think that we can. If so, I hope that you will at least be rethinking that by the end of this. Okay, here's what Jesus has to say to us about love for enemies in Matthew 5 and Luke 6. Please listen closely for the kind of love that he's calling us to. Is he calling us to have good thoughts and feelings, even if our actions don't necessarily reflect that? Or is he calling us to something quite a bit more costly and sacrificial than that? I'm going to add a little emphasis on some words and phrases to draw attention to the kind of love that Jesus is talking about here. All right, so here's Matthew 5, 43 to 48. Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You, therefore, must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Okay, so how does Jesus describe the love that we're supposed to have for our enemies? When he says, love your enemies, is he thinking of a feeling or an action? Well, he points to his Father as the example of the kind of love we're supposed to have for our enemies. And he says that God makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on them. Not that he just loves them in his heart, but he does good to them. And you can see what kind of love Jesus is talking about when he uses the tax collectors and the Gentiles as examples of worldly love that isn't enough. Don't just love those who love you. Don't just greet your friends. Even the tax collectors and the Gentiles do that sort of thing. But Jesus is telling us to do more than what worldly people do. He's telling us to do good to friend and enemy alike. Okay, now here is Luke 6, 27 to 36. And here I think it comes even more clear. Jesus says, but I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. To one who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who begs from you. And from the one who takes away your goods, do not demand them back. And as you wish that others would do to you, do so to them. Okay, pause. So in the context of this teaching of love, on love for enemies, Jesus says we're supposed to do to people what we wish others to do for us. Not love them in our hearts only while we do to them what we hope never happens to us. Okay, continuing on in Luke, Jesus says, if you love those who love you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what benefit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful, even as your Father is merciful. So just think about the words and phrases that Jesus uses here to describe the love that he's talking about. Do good, bless, pray, offer the other cheek, do not withhold your tunic, do not demand your goods back, lend, be kind, be merciful, do good. I mean, how many times is the word do in here, or the words do good? It's all over the place. It permeates the passage. But I don't see the word feel in here. I don't see the words feel good. Love your enemies and feel good about those who hate you. Think good thoughts while you punch them back, or while you fight them to get your goods back, or fight them to hold on to your tunic. No. When Jesus tells us to love our enemies, he's telling us to treat them well. Jesus is calling us to act a certain way, to be a certain way, to love a certain way with our deeds. He wants us to have love in our hearts for our enemies, of course. But he wants our actions to reflect that love, just like his actions reflected the love he had for sinners who hated him. We need to be like that. And so if that's what love your enemies means, that you actually do them good, then okay, nonviolence is the clear implication. I understand now why the early Christians all thought that this was a no-brainer. But this idea that all that's really required of us is that we love our enemies in our hearts, and that as long as that's there, we can do whatever we feel we need to do to them to protect ourselves. No, that's not in the text. That's foreign to the teaching of Jesus. It's foreign to the example of Jesus. That's one of these false teachings that Paul warned would one day come along that tell us what we want to hear. And that's all I really feel I need to say about these two passages. And as I've mentioned before, for some people, this is just really clear without having to give it too much thought. Jesus said to love my enemies. Okay, pretty straightforward. Violence is not an option. I'm not going to hurt anyone, no matter what they do to me or the people around me, just like Jesus. I'm going to find nonviolent ways to respond to evil. I'm going to trust God with it. I'm going to take whatever might come to me. Simple. But it's not so simple for many, many others. A lot of people struggle with this, and I get why. It is extremely difficult. I think it tends to be particularly difficult for men, particularly for men who are married with kids and who feel an obligation to protect their families. I understand that. Particularly American conservative men who cherish their right to bear arms and who are married with kids and who've been watching action movies and war movies all their lives, and who think that it's a great thing that America has such a powerful military. Very hard for people in that place to figure out how in the world this can make sense. And I understand that. And so there are a number of objections and arguments that might be coming up in your mind right now if you're someone who has a tough time with this. And I'll try to address some of the ones that I've come up against. Some of them are reasonable arguments. Some of them are silly and are not worth responding to, but they're out there, and so I'm going to respond to them. Okay, first objection. Somebody might say, well, look, Jesus never actually says not to fight back if someone is like trying to kill you or injure you or something like that. Yeah, he says to love your enemies, but he doesn't come out and say not to use physical force in situations where your life is threatened or where someone else's life is threatened. A lot of people aren't satisfied with these passages not getting super explicit in addressing some of those scenarios. What I think we need to see here is that Jesus gives us a guiding principle. When he says to love our enemies, what is clear from the passage is that he's calling us to do good to them. And this is getting into the topic of non-resistance a bit, which helps to clarify this, and which I want to discuss more thoroughly in the next episode. But just a few quick thoughts. Jesus doesn't specifically cover all of the dangerous situations we could potentially find ourselves in with our enemies. He doesn't explicitly cover if someone violently mugs you, or if someone wants to rape you, or if someone breaks into your house, or if someone tries to run you off the road, or if someone spits in your face and pushes you. He doesn't get specific and explicit with every scenario that we can think of. He does cover someone slapping you in the face or punching you in the face. He covers someone stealing from you, which could involve violence. He covers persecution, which obviously involves life-threatening violence at times. But there are all sorts of possible situations that he doesn't cover. That's okay. Jesus doesn't have to cover every possible scenario. That would be a really long sermon. But he gives us a command, a principle, a teaching that can be applied in all sorts of scenarios. If someone hates you and or wants to do some kind of evil to you, which could look like all different kinds of things, that person is your enemy. And what's the big idea, the guiding principle? It's love your enemy. And by love, we mean not just feel good about them, but do good to them. And of course, doing good to them would prohibit things like punching them in the face or in the throat, taking them down to the ground and putting them in an arm bar, sticking a knife in them, filling their face with pepper spray, shooting them. That's not doing good to them. That's not loving them in the way Jesus is talking about. And just a quick aside, this gives us clarity on Christians in the military or as police officers and whether or not that's okay. Maybe you know someone who fought as a soldier. Maybe this person killed people in combat and they feel terrible about it. Maybe they even prayed for the people they were shooting as they pulled the trigger. And you say, look, their hearts were pure towards their enemies. They didn't enjoy doing this. They were just doing their duty. Or maybe you know someone who served in the Navy and they were just pushing buttons, firing missiles at targets. They had no hatred towards the people they were firing these weapons at. They were just following orders. And you say, they didn't have anger in their hearts. Okay, sure. Maybe there are soldiers and cops who kill in the line of duty and who don't want to hurt anyone. They're not necessarily angry. Maybe they even have a lot of remorse. Maybe they even pray for the families of those people that they've killed with tears in their eyes. And I want to be sensitive to people like that, but I also want to be faithful to Jesus above all. The question is, when they pulled that trigger or when they pushed that button, did that action reveal that they had the kind of love in their hearts for those people that Jesus wants us to have for our enemies? When they pulled that trigger, was that a loving act? Were they doing good to that person or those people whose lives they ended? Come on, the answer is clear. Again, I want to be sensitive to people who serve in these kind of positions. I know it takes courage. I know that it can give people horrible psychological problems, but they need to repent if they want to get in line with what Jesus said and did. Okay, the next objection or argument. Maybe someone thinks they can use violence to defend themselves or others, or that they can go to war as a Christian, and you say to them, no, you have to love your enemies. You can't do violence to them. And I've actually heard this argument before. They may say, ah, but someone who attacks me or my family isn't my enemy. I don't even know them. I have nothing personal against them, no anger towards them. I'm just going to do what I need to do in order to protect myself and my loved ones. That's all. It's nothing personal. Or they may say, if I fight for the military, I wouldn't be killing my enemies. I have no personal issue against the people I might fight against as a soldier. I don't even know those people. And okay, well, if people who want to hurt you or kill you and your family or people who are fighting against you in war aren't your enemies, then who is your enemy? It's a very strange argument. And when Jesus is talking to his Jewish audience here about loving their enemies, he's calling them to love not only other Jews with whom they might have a personal issue with, but he's calling them to love the Romans, people they don't necessarily even know. And someone in the crowd that day could have reasoned to themselves, well, the Romans aren't my enemy. I don't even know any of them personally. I have no issue with them personally. So this teaching must not apply to how I treat Romans. That's pretty silly. But okay, if you really don't consider people who want to kill you or people you might fight against as a soldier to be your enemies, then what would that make them? Are they your friends? Are they your acquaintances? Are they strangers? What are they to you if they're not your enemies? What category are they in? Well, they're certainly your neighbors. And if you're willing to kill them anyway, even though they're not even your enemies, then I would hate to see what you would do to people you do consider to be your enemies. That must be really brutal. I mean, if you're willing to kill people you have no personal issues with, what horrible, awful things will you do to people you do have a personal problem with? This is a really weird line of reasoning that is clearly not of Jesus. And believe it or not, I've heard very intelligent people resort to this argument. Okay, here's another argument that I've heard. Someone might say, well, look, Jesus is just talking about religious persecution. He says to pray for those who persecute you. That's very different from someone who's attacking you for some other reason. That's very different from what a soldier does in war. Well, it depends on the war, I guess. Some wars are fought over religion. And organizations like ISIS and the Taliban clearly have it out for Christians. But I doubt that many of the people who make this argument would be nonviolent if ISIS showed up in their neighborhood. But anyway, Jesus says in Matthew's sermon to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. It seems to me that enemies here would include any kind of enemy, since he seems to distinguish between enemies and those who persecute us. Obviously, those who persecute us are also enemies, but is he not talking about all of the above? And anyway, he's not addressing persecution in Luke's sermon. He's clearly talking about any kind of enemy. People who just want to do evil to you, who steal from you, punch you, sue you, hate you, etc. He doesn't say anything about religious persecution in the Luke sermon. And the passage in Matthew 5 on non-resistance is not specifically addressing religious persecution either. So this argument doesn't work. We just need to love all of our enemies, whether they persecute us for our faith or whether they just want to do evil to us for some other reason. And one more argument that I would anticipate when talking to someone about Matthew 5 or Luke 6, someone might say something like, well, Jesus says to be like our Father in heaven, who makes his sun rise on the good and evil, and who sends rain on the just and on the unjust. But our Father also brings wrath on people at times and destroys them and metes out justice at times. So shouldn't we follow that example too, when appropriate? If God does it can't be wrong for us to do it. Aren't we supposed to be like our Father? And a similar argument is that, well, Jesus takes life today from heaven, and when he comes back, he's going to slay his enemies with a sword that comes out of his mouth. Can't we be like Jesus? Well, if Jesus had commanded us, destroy your enemies and mete out justice to them, just as your Father in heaven brings justice on the wicked, then yeah, we could do that. But God gets to tell us which of his actions are the ones we should imitate and which are the ones that are reserved for him and off limits for us. And he has been clear about that through the teachings and the example of his Son. And isn't it intuitive, if we're being honest and not just trying to get out of this, that there are things God does that we should not try to do, that we don't get to do? There are certain things God has the authority to do that we don't have the authority to do. There are certain things he does that we can't do and shouldn't try to emulate because We are not the sinless, perfect, all-wise creator and source of life and all reality. And we are not the judge of the world. But we are imperfect human beings who desperately need mercy from God. And if we have become followers of Jesus, then we have received mercy and still need it going forward. And so the only thing that's appropriate for us to dish out to others is the same kind of mercy that we have been given. It's like a human father and his children. There are certain things that he does that they should imitate, and certain things that he does that are not for them. Daddy is always nice to mommy, and he never hits her. Therefore, I will be nice to my brothers and sisters, and I won't hit them. Yes, very good. Daddy finishes his dinner. Therefore, I will finish my dinner. Yes. Daddy spanks me and my brothers and sisters, and he drives the car, and he and mommy make babies together. Therefore, I will... No, no, not for you. That's not something for you to imitate. Jesus specifically tells us to emulate the way God is kind to both good and evil, how he actually does good to them. He does not permit Christians to be like God in his judgment of sinners or in his authority to take life as he sees fit as the creator of life. That's not for us. I realize that God has given the sword to the governments of the world to accomplish a certain purpose, and I plan to give that issue its own episode. If that's a hang-up for you, then please stick with me and listen to that episode. It is not a difficult thing to reconcile that with what Jesus is commanding to his kingdom citizens. And as far as Jesus bringing judgment on people from heaven today, or what Jesus will do when he returns, I hope to discuss that some more in a later episode as well. But here are a few thoughts. First of all, the same principle applies. We're not Jesus. Jesus gets to do things that we don't get to do now and when he returns. But what are we instructed to do now, today? James and John once asked Jesus if he wanted them to call down fire from heaven to destroy some Samaritans who would not welcome Jesus. Now, those people certainly deserved fire from heaven. But Jesus turned and rebuked James and John. There was something about their being eager to be the conduits of God's justice that was not appropriate. That kind of thing may have happened under the old covenant in certain isolated situations when God specifically commanded it or made it happen by some miracle. But we don't get to be God's agents of wrath through violence. Under the new covenant, we are agents of grace. And so Jesus rebukes James and John when they make this suggestion, and I'm certain that both James and John would rebuke us today if they heard us using this argument that, hey, God brings down wrath, Jesus will cast people into eternal fire one day, therefore maybe we can be God's agents of justice today to destroy the wicked. No. There's a reason why 1 John tells us that whoever claims to be in Jesus must live as he lived, past tense, how he lived when he was here. Not whoever claims to be in him should try to do what Jesus does today from heaven or what he will do when the day of judgment comes. The time for that is not now. Now is the day of salvation, the window of grace. That window has been opened to us, and it is opened to our enemies. And God desires mercy. He wants to use us to get them through that window. He wants all to be saved. The day of judgment is coming, but God doesn't enjoy the destruction of human beings. So let's stop desperately grasping for things in Scripture to try and get out of having to live in line with the example Jesus gave us to follow during his earthly life here. And there are other objections and arguments people make And I'm hoping to do maybe an episode devoted to nothing but responding to various challenges and objections to nonviolence that I've come across. So if you're thinking of one that I haven't addressed, please hang in there and feel free to send it to me. Send me a message and tell me what this argument is. I would appreciate that very much. We are called to do good to our enemies in this life as disciples of Jesus. And I think once this sinks in, that loving our enemies is about what we do to them, not just about how we feel about them. When that sinks in for you, then you are very close to having to put your gun or your weapon or your self-defense moves away for good. And if you're in the military or if you're a police officer or something like that, you are very close to having to resign or at the very least to move to some kind of position that won't require you to use violence. And you are very close to having a demonic stronghold come down in your mind. This idea that you can love your enemy and kill them at the same time or hurt them at the same time. That is an appealing, plausible sounding argument that needs to be torn down. All right, in the next episode, I plan to discuss Jesus' teaching specifically on non-resistance in Matthew 5, 38, 42, as well as the specific things he says about that in Luke's sermon. It's closely related to love for enemies, but it is different, and it's going to get into some more difficult questions. Thank you so much for listening, and may God bless you always, whoever you are.